is here and the department, you can indicate, and also maybe start with members.
Yes, the AG's office is here. The department is also here. So the DG and the minister is also here. We also do have sufficient members to start with yourself, Honorable Mang, Honorable Pasha, Honorable Land, Honorable Matavula. And in terms of staff, we've got Enrico Vizier and Sibeli Nikshi. So we do have sufficient members to start.
Okay. No, thanks very much. Let me then formally open the meeting and welcome everybody, honorable members. I think this is our first meeting in the fourth term. We're coming from the constituency period. Let me just explain that in terms of our program, we were originally going to meet with the department on the issue of UIF response to COVID, as well as the compensation fund. We then, when we received a report from the AG on the audit that they were conducting in all the departments, we then said we should then, instead of having a separate meeting just focusing on the audit outcomes, we should combine it with the meeting that we originally scheduled for the department to come and brief us on the UIF and the compensation fund performance. So what is then going to happen is that we're going to receive a report from the AG, the office representative, on the UIF first, and then also on the compensation fund. Then the department, I've seen their presentations. They respond on the first, on the issue of our brief on both the UIF and the compensation fund. So we request them to, after the AG report, they also go and to the section in their presentation that then talks to the report of the AG. Then we'll have a discussion on both of them, on the AG report and also on the response of the department. When we're done then with the report, both of the department and AG, we will then release the AG representative, and then we focus then on the other issues that relate to the Department of Employment and Labor. So that is going to be the process. I don't know why I decided to come to this to Parliament, but I see that it says my connection is unstable. Keep on telling me that my is unstable. I don't understand. I decided all the way to drive to Parliament. Can we then check if we have any apologies? This might be.
Yes, Chief, we have one apology from Honorable Dango, who lost his brother. So he's in bereavement right now. So there's one apology from Honorable Dango.
Yes. Maybe at this stage if we can just bow our head. I think it's a third time now in the family of Mr. Dow. In 3 months, people losing his brothers. Can I just take this opportunity to ask the people just to bow and we send our condolences to him and his family. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. I think every month since August, they lose a member of the family. August, September, now it's October. Another member of the family has passed away. It's definitely Can you just write the agenda? This one.
Enrico, can I ask you to just write the agenda quickly?
Maybe what we should do then, we should rather ask that you slide then the slide of the AG on the UI, and I have a list of the representative of the office. I don't know who's leading the delegation. Can we get an indication from the office of AG?
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, ma'am.
I'm Sibongile Lubambo. I'm leading the delegation from the AGSA. Thanks.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Welcome. I heard that the minister is here. Good morning, Minister and the Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
Thank you, Minister. Good morning once again.
Good morning, morning, Chairperson. So I can have 45 minutes.
Okay. So. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Can we ask then Ms. Sibongile Lubambo to lead us? Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Chair. So maybe let me take the opportunity to greet everyone. So good afternoon, good morning, sorry, to the honourable members, the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the team. We are here. There is Ms. Khabo Komape, who will be taking us through the presentation, who is part of the delegation. There is Ms. Gabali, so who is an executive for our stakeholder BU, or BU responsible for the stakeholders, and the other members that are supporting us from Parliament. So as we're starting the presentation, Chair, I thought it would be important just to remind the members in terms of what was the scope of our the work we've done on UIF specifically, and how we went about doing the work, and obviously so that when we get to the finding themselves, you have that context in mind. So you recall, Chair, that when the AG presented the special report, he did talk to the period that we were covering. So in the main, we would have looked at the payments for UIF revisit as iterations. So it would be iteration 1 and 2, which in the main would be the claims for the April and May period. And we looked at it, so the payment that we made up until the 9th of July. So that's what we would have covered. But also the work that we've covered, we sort of categorized it into three areas. So the starting point for us was obviously to understand the processes from the department. So how they are planning to obviously implement this process from the application side right to payment, to look at that process and identify risk. And we refer to them as probably preventative controls, where we said, these are the controls that you, key controls you need to have in place to obviously avoid fraud and errors from happening in the process. So the starting point would have been a discussion around preventative controls, where we would have flagged risk as well that the department had to respond to. The second part of it, obviously, is that the department had to put together a system where an IT system where they were going to process the application and the application in the main for this tariff system. So we looked at the IT controls. We just looked at whether the controls around the system are strong enough to ensure the integrity of the transactions that would be processed on them. There was a bit of work we've done around a supply chain where they have done procurement, which was specific to this COVID or the tier process, so we have looked at it. But the biggest part of the work we've done here was data analytics. And then the main on data analytics, what we've done, we took the information from UIF side, being the application, the information relating to the application, right up to the payment, and we've done analysis. So we've done a data analytics where you analyze the information, try and pick up challenges around that, where what is being presented, there's gaps, or some things do not make sense, the weaknesses. But we've also used that information to compare it to some of the government databases that we have access to, as the AGS said, to help flag additional risk or additional areas that the UIF has to focus on as they try and close the weaknesses that we've reported. And to do that, we've had to use a number of experts that we have within the organization. So we would have put a multidisciplinary team that is made up of our fraud experts from the organization, that is made up of our supply chain expert, but in the main, also our IT auditors that have helped us with the IT side of the audit. And I think that is the team that then helped to bring forth the gaps and the weaknesses that we have. So I thought it would be important just to paint that picture here before we start presentation here. And after the end of the presentation, then we would deal with any questions that you might have. So with your permission, Chair, I'd like to hand over to Kgabo Komape to take us through the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. As introduced, I'm Kgabo Komape. I'm the business executive overseeing the labor portfolio. I will take you through the observations we got through, we got from the UIF audit, Chair. But in particular, I need to highlight that the report we're sharing with you contains the observations we would have shared with the department, with the UIF itself and the minister as at end of August. So I would believe that by now there would have been a couple of enhancements, and I'm sure they will engage you later on what they would have done subsequent to the audit. So if you remember, the AG had tabled the report around the 2nd of September. So the report is in three sections, Chair. The first part will deal with the internal control observations, and there we are lamenting the issue around preventative control that are required to ensure that we safeguard at least the fiscus. The second part of the presentation will deal with the observations from the data analytics and also highlight the possible fraud risk that we had indicated to the fund and the department as well. And lastly, we're also just indicating that we had started the process of visiting some of the selected employers just to be able to give UIF feedback on what are some of the things we are picking up when we visit the premises of those who benefited from the COVID-19 test benefits. So if I may go to slide number eight, Chair, if they could assist me there. I'm just moving to it. Thank you. So this slide starts by highlighting the key preventative controls. Obviously, here we are uplisting the deficiencies that we would have picked up from our audit. And the first one deals with the level of verification of applicant representing employers. And there is just an appreciation that UIF would have allowed the employers to be claiming on behalf of the employees. They will also have allowed some of the bargaining council to claim on behalf of the employees. And we say that in instances where the money was paid directly to the employer or directly to the bargaining council, there ought to be proper verification in checking that the people who are submitting the claim rightfully are dedicated by those employers or those bargaining councils. And there should be an appreciation, Chair, as well, that the UIF benefit processes would have almost separated two elements. There was the first part, where the payments were done on a manual process right at the beginning before the introduction of the TERS system. And the second part would have been when everything was automated. So our observation will include those elements as well. The second observation that we highlighted was the incorrect system calculation of the TERS benefits payment for the first lockdown period. And there we were just highlighting the fact that when an employer submits an application, the UIF was meant to only compensate for the business, for the time that the business was inactive due to the lockdown. But we've observed that they were paying 35 days across all employers, which may not necessarily have been correct, because some employers would have been able to operate at least for a portion of the period. So we highlighted that, and some of the recommendations that we put was to please make sure that you do the right calculation for employers. Please make sure that you do recover the money where you overpaid some of these employers. On the next slide, which is page number 9, we are highlighting once more as part of the preventative controls, the inadequate verification of employers' details. There we are saying, as if I come and I'm an employer and I'm making a claim on behalf of a couple of employees, there has to be very stringent processes in verifying my details as an employer. So not only relying on the UIF reference number, but making sure that my UIF reference number correlates with my details, my SIPs, my banking details, and the likes as well. So we uplifted that because we identified it as one of the deficiencies in the system. And under number 4, we highlighted inadequate system functionality for bank confirmation of uploaded documents. I think we noticed that some of the documents that the UIF upload on the system, that employers upload to the system as they're applying for the benefit, will include the bank confirmation. Then we are asking the UIF that as a minimum, please check that that confirmation that is uploaded correlate with the banking details that are captured on your system, just to make sure that you are paying the right person and the bank account belongs to that particular person. If I could go to the next slide, Chair. On slide number 10, Again, under the preventative controls, we are highlighting the lack of consideration of the salary portion paid by employer in the calculation of the payout for the first lockdown period. And I think there we say, if there is a portion of the salary that the employer was able to pay, please make sure that the take home of that particular person does not exceed that which they ordinarily would have gotten had the employer paid the full salary. So we had identified an area where the portion of the salary was not built into the calculation of the TERS payments to be paid out. And the next one, we highlighted the lack of verification of employee salary submitted during the benefit claims. Chair, there I think we were appreciating that as part of the benefit payment, the UIF will consider the salary that the person ordinarily would have gotten had the employer been the one that's paying the salary. And we say, when these employers are making applications, there has to be a very strict control in verifying that the salary that they are claiming that their employee was getting correlates with what they have been paying themselves prior to the lockdown. So that verification process, we had asked the UIF to tighten it up. On the next slide, which is slide number 11, this is the area where we're talking to the data analytics, and really under the data analytics chair, we were just doing the comparison of the data within government, within the UIF, the investigation and analysis by the UIF. And here, one of the key things that we're also highlighting is to say, please reflect on what we're putting on your table, determine what your intention was when this benefit was introduced, and then make a conclusion on whether the payment had followed the intention that you had in mind at the beginning. So the first element that we had picked up is that there were people that benefited and those applicants, and you would appreciate that the people under the age of the line would not be allowed, would have picked up the fact that there would have been payments made to such individuals. And the next one we identified that there was an employee of the UIF, so let's say the identity number that was on the TERS payment matched one of the UIF employees. And basically what we've done there is just to, we extracted the data of the UIF in terms of their PERSAL and all the salary payments that they've made. We also compared to the TERS benefits data, just to try and see if there are some of the employees of the UIF that may have gotten the benefit. So we highlighted that for the benefit of the UIF, making an investigation and determination of, was it the intention of the UIF to pay this particular employee? Is it an indication of a deficiency that required further analysis, and act on it if it wasn't meant to? If I go to the next slide, slide number 13, again under data analytics, we highlighted the deceased individuals who were paid the test benefit. And primarily what we've done here, we have taken the data from the test benefit, we had compared it with the Home Affairs, and we could pick up that some of the individuals were already passed away at the point of them supposedly receiving the payment. And once more, we had asked the UIF to look into it, investigate and determine primarily the indication of fraud, if there is any. If you go to slide number 12 again, the next issue around issue number 10, the individuals who are imprisoned were paid tests. Again, here we had extracted data from the DCS as well, and to try and just compare what is it that UIF would have paid and who did they pay. And we could pick up that there are people that are identified as at least imprisoned by the DCS database. However, the UIF would have paid them at that point where they're supposed to be in prison at the point in time. So we highlighted it to the UIF as well to investigate it and see what comes out of it. And we've got to slide number 13, Chair, under 11, again under the analytics, we identified individuals with invalid ID numbers. And what we've done once more, we had utilized the Home Affairs database, and we would have picked up ID numbers that are not necessarily matching that any of the ID numbers that are sitting in the Home Affairs. And it could be due to various contributions. So what we ask the UIF is to say, first, when you go on your system, make sure that your system in that particular column can pick up if an ID number is invalid at the point of entry. But for the people that you already paid, let's investigate it, let's determine what would have transpired. Is it an indication of fraud? Is it a pure error? And how do we then resolve it? And if you go to number 12 as well, we identified the payments that were made to the foreign nationals with the appreciation that PSUIF would have intended to pay some of the foreign nationals if they meet the definition of an employee. And we're saying that the refugee status, you ought to check if they have valid work permits as part of just making sure that you are paying the legit workers who are supposed to be claiming from the fund as such. If we go to the next slide, Chair, number 14. Here we had highlighted again under data analytics that what we termed double dipping. Really, double dipping for us is we had identified individuals who are benefiting from different initiatives of government. And once more, we're saying as a UIF, pause and reflect on it, determine if it was your, at least as government, with the limited resources that you're having, you would have intentions on who needs to be covered from the test benefit. So what we highlighted under the double dipping, we had highlighted the NSFAS students, so the beneficiaries of NSFAS who also got to claim from the UIF. And we're saying to the UIF, please reflect and determine if that was your intention. We've done so again for the beneficiaries of the SNDF. We had pulled the data from all the payments that were made from the SNDF, and we could find some of the individuals that got benefit from that side, and they also got benefit from the UIF. We did the same for the personnel employees, people who work for government. So we identified multiple individuals who are getting the personnel in terms of the salaries, but they also claimed the TES benefit. We also identified the people or individuals who are getting the disability grant, but they also got the benefit claim from the UIF. And once more, we also got the old age grant recipients who also got the test benefit. And on this one in particular, we cognizant that there may not be a law that says you do not do that. But we're highlighting it because we're saying as government, you need to reflect on, was this your intention to keep on benefiting certain individuals on multiple benefit process? If that is your intention, that should be okay for as long as we streamline it across government and we make sure that it is also understood.
So those are the items that we highlighted as double dipping. And then on number 14, we had identified the banking details same as those of the UIF employees. Once more, we went to the UIF database. We extracted the bank accounts. The first one, we went to the ID numbers, but this time we used the angle of the banking details. And we could identify the people who got the benefit through the test system, but they're also being paid on the UIF system as well. So we highlighted to the UIF for them to be able to determine what ought to have happened in that instance as well. And I think the key thing that we do with the data analytics is really trying to make sure that government work as a system. So mainly just benefiting from the rich data that you are having as government, network it and determine if you had intended to benefit the same people or your intentions was different, and then act on the result that you are seeing. And most importantly, investigate incidences that may have elements of fraud, so that you are able to close that loop as well. On slide number 15, again on data analytics, we had highlighted the individuals who are sharing the banking details. And this one is within the system itself, meaning within the test system itself. We were just picking up some of the recipients of the benefit, and we were checking the banking details, and we could see that although the individuals are different, but the banking account, the bank account was the same. We highlighted that to the UIF. And then we also have what we termed double dip within the UIF. And this one was mainly where you are getting a test benefit, but at the same time, you're getting another benefit of the UIF on the other side. So it could have been maternity, it could have been any other benefit, but it is for the same period. Then we are saying there's a double dipping. UIF needed to determine which one was meant to be paid and which one was not meant to be. If we go to slide number 16, item number 17 there, we had highlighted the payments above the maximum threshold. Once more, when we started doing the audit, as part of our understanding of the calculation and the business, we had to first comprehend the maximum threshold of the UIF, and we did the recalculation. And from our side, we then put on the table the items and the individuals who we believe that would have been paid in excess of the maximum amount. We've asked the UIF to unpack every element of it and determine what ought to have happened in that instance. And on number 18, we also highlighted once more the overpayment. Once more, we were just doing the calculation and determining what should have been paid if I take into consideration the period of inactivity of that particular business and how much that employee would have gotten, and what is it that UIF should have paid that particular employee. If you go to slide number 17, as part of the recalculation, again, it's the same principle, but in this instance, we were highlighting the people that we believe they were underpaid. And on number 20, Chair, we were highlighting an employer who was paid three times for the same application and the total amount. And I think there we were saying, your system should be able to prohibit multiple sub-applications, or as much as it relates, or so far as it relates to one employer and one particular period. So we highlighted that particular employer to the UIF for them to analyze and also enhance the system to be able to assist them in bloating such instances. On page number 18, issue number 21, as part of the data analytics once more, we have what we termed unsubstantiated payments. And here we said there are payments that we couldn't reconcile back to the system. So we could appreciate that there are payments that are made, but we're saying if we could go back to the applications themselves, then we'd be able to reconcile each and every one of them. And we had challenges and we updated that particular matter, but we've given the UIF the details of those as well. And then we have another one where we tempted unsubstantiated application made, similar principle as well. But this one, we said these applications did not have a matching invoice. So these are some of the preliminary supporting documents that we were hoping to get. And instances where we did not get, we had highlighted it to the UIF. And on page number 19, issue number 23, again, under data analytics, we're saying there are claims with an application date that is after the payment date, which is a bit odd. So here we're saying We notice that you've made payments, but ordinarily somebody must make a payment first and they get, I mean, they must make an application first and be followed by a payment. And I think we could pick up instances where the payment date, as far as the system is concerned, was at least after the, or was before the application was made. If I could go to page number 22. And here we are in the category that we classified as procurement and contract management. We've really done a couple of procedures. We executed a couple of procedures around procurement, and we highlighted our observations to the UIF as well. And issue number 24, there we are highlighting the non-compliance with the instruction note, but primarily with regard to a certain service provider, because we could not necessarily get evidence that support the service provider that would have been picked up as a sole provider as such. And the issue number 25, we are talking to the discrepancies relating to the appointment of a service provider. And particularly there, we were indicating that they used some of the, let's say they amended the specification. So they used specification of a certain service provider as a motivation to be appointing that particular service provider. And we feel that disadvantaged other service providers. Instead of just making sure that the bid specifications are streamlined, they're the same for everybody, and everybody else needed to respond as such. We also highlighted the unfair awarding of the contract. In that instance, we are saying that the person who achieved the second position was then given a contract. We believe this is a contravention of Section 51 of the PFMA and the preferential procurement regulations. And those are the matters that we highlighted under SCM in particular. If I go to the next slide, Chair. The next slide on page 21, under the category risk and control deficiency, here we were saying, after everything is said and done, after having looked at the internal control, after having performed your data analytics, we believe that you're exposed. And once more, we were highlighting some of the exposure that came with the manual process that they would have moved away from as part of the rolling out of the system or the test system. But we said there is a fraud risk relating to the manual application processes, and we highlighted that the UIF said for all the claims and the payments that were made on the manual process, please sectionalize them, analyze them, and make sure that you follow the right processes in recovering the money where there's a clear indication that you had paid people who were not eligible to the payment, to those payments. And number 28, we highlighted the fraud risk relating to the manual and online system. And once more, we were indicating the fact that you have to proactively prevent some of these things before they occur, because we are appreciating that the process of recovering the money is likely to be costly, is likely not to yield the desired impact, simply because some of the employers who may have claimed the business may have collapsed, they may not even have the money to be able to come back to the fund and repay some of the benefits that they have got. And I think that's why from the AGSA, we are advocating for preventative controls, because we believe that if you implement the right internal control system beforehand, you'll alleviate a lot of pressure from yourself as a fund to then have to go after several individuals in an attempt to get your money back. And you also discourage some of the people who may be taking advantage of the deficiencies in the system and just making sure that the money is channeled to the people that were rightfully intended for. If I could go to slide number 22, Chair. There we are highlighting, as I indicated at the beginning, Chair, that we are visiting some of the selected employers, obviously on a sample basis, but there is just to make sure that claims that they had made to the UIF, the information that they submitted, and the monies that they had gotten had also made it to the right recipients. We are cognizant that the UIF have got a process that they call a post-validation processes, where they would also on a 100 basis go and visit some of these employers in an attempt to make sure that we respond properly to all instances where people may have gotten the money that they ought not to have gotten from the fund. That is just in summary from our side. If I could go to the next slide, in conclusion, and as part of the way forward, we are once more saying the stringent preventative control should be implemented. That will minimize the risk of fraud. It will discourage people from taking advantage of the fund, and it will also minimize the error from the fund perspective, and just make sure that at least your efforts are yielding the results that you intended to get. On the second element, we're saying, let's design as a UIF, design and implement the detective controls. So on a continuous basis, have a mechanism that will be able to tell you whether your systems are giving you what you ought to be getting or not, and also allow you to be able to act promptly in instances where things are not going according to the intended purpose. And lastly, there we are saying institute a process of investigation and do recoup the monies paid for the COVID-19 test benefit to people who are not eligible. So in the bigger scale of things, we're saying for all the observations that your own investigation is also indicating that money had landed in hands that they did not meant to be landed in, please do make sure that you recoup that money and you take the right action as part of the consequence management. And the audit scope for the AGSA, you would remember, Chair, that when the AEG was promising to support government in this regard, we had said that we will have the first report, which we tabled end of August, but we're also intending on tabling the second report around the end of November, so that we can cover the follow-up work, reflecting on what is it that the UIF have done since we left them with the first report, and secondly, also expand our testing to some of the iterations of the payments that they would have made since our first report. So we're hoping that we would be able to engage Parliament again and yourselves as part of the second report and a feedback in that regard, so that we are able to consistently support the UIF as they do what they are currently doing. And that's just in summary from our side, Chair. If you could allow me to pause here for the UIF, we do have the slides for the compensation fund. I'm not sure, Chair, if you would like me to move straight to the compensation fund or I should pause.
Yes, thanks. Yes. Yeah, you can continue with the compensation
fund. Thank you so much. If the secretariat could be kind and beam for me as well. If you could just flag the compensation fund slide.
Enrico. Okay. No, the AG, the AG one, not the Department of Employment and Labor. The one of AG Enrico. It says COVID-19 presentation, yes. CF.
Yes.
COVID-19 presentation, CF. Maybe Ms. Kopan, if you have the slide in front of you, because I think it's just three slides.
All right. Thank you so much. I see on my side, Chair, they disable the function. May I ask, Kabelo, may you flag it for me, please?
Oh, they should give you the rights to host as well.
I don't think I have the rights. I'll see if I can flag it as well, Fabo.
All right.
No, they must give you the rights first.
Thank you. Chair, if they could give Kabelo Makitla the rights.
We've just done so.
Okay, I have it now, so I'll just like it.
Great. This is a serious audit query of moving in between, and we can't be able to see the slide.
Noted.
Is that a observation or a finding?
We will give a finding to the committee.
It seems I can't share them still.
There we go.
Oh, I think they are both doing it. Actually, I see that also Enrico is also fighting it. That's why maybe you're having a challenge.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
May I go ahead, Chair? Okay.
Move to the next slide, Enrico.
Thank you. If I may, Chair, I'll go ahead.
Yes, please.
For the compensation fund, Chair, we've done the work, but it was really on a limited scale. In the main, they had paid 404,000, and that was around 111 beneficiaries. So there wasn't much that would have been paid from the compensation fund so far as COVID-19 benefits are concerned. We did note that they would have had claims submitted around 3.6 million. So if you look at the compensation fund, we really just highlighted the main controls, because the work itself would not have been in detail, primarily because there wasn't much of activity so far as COVID-19 payments are concerned. And you would notice as well that when we go to the second report, we had opted as the AGSA to then leave out the compensation fund from the special report of the AGSA. But we're hoping that we will still incorporate the elements of the COVID-19 as part of their normal report. So if you could go to the next slide, if you could allow me, page number 4. There's primarily 3 main findings that we had flagged for the compensation fund to look into. And the first one had to do with inadequate access control, and that was from the system that they are using. You see, the compensation fund have the system that they call a Comp Easy, and we had identified that as the lack of user access controls and reviews, as well as inadequate measures to ensure segregation of. There is just to ensure that the people that are accessing the system are the people that were intended to access the system, and the control are such that they are able to block and detect instances where somebody could be trying to flaunt the processes. On the second element, we are highlighting inadequate application controls to prevent duplicate claims. And there we were primarily saying your system as a compensation fund will not be able to block an instance where an application would be processed on the same incident and the same recipient. We highlighted that to the compensation fund for them to react to it. We also indicated inadequate controls over the receiving and the adjudication of the claims. So you would notice that across the 3 findings, the key main thing that we were concerning ourselves with as the AGSA was the preventative controls around the system, just to ensure that there isn't a process where the compensation fund would make payments and then have to go after those people in an attempt to get the money back. So we were saying strengthen your control mechanism right from the general controls on the system, the application control, and be able to detect in instances where the system is not giving you what it's supposed to give you. That is just on the compensation fund. Like I indicated at the beginning,
the payments were very minimal so far as COVID-19 are concerned. So the bigger part of the compensation fund will be coming through as normal regularity audit of the HGSA, and we should be able to engage both management and the department in that regard. So that's just a summary that we had opted to share with you on the compensation fund. Like I highlighted, we would not be carrying forward the compensation fund in the special report of the AGSA that is intended for the 30th of November, primarily because we could observe that there isn't much traction from the COVID-19 payments so far as the CF is concerned. Chair, that's just the summary from our side. Thank you for providing us an opportunity. If I could pause here and we could allow engagement where possible. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. What we're going to do, as I indicated earlier, we're going to allow then the department to make presentation on TES and also on the compensation fund. And then after, we'll then have an opportunity to ask questions to both the AG and the department. So at this stage, I'll allow Honorable Minister to make opening remarks, and then delegate chair, the person will be making the presentation. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and the Honorable Members of the Select Committee, the Deputy Minister, the DG, and the Senior Management of the Department, the UIF, and the Compensating Fund, of course. There will always be members of the media, and ladies and gentlemen, and thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Well, I always say I take very seriously these engagements with Parliament, where you hold the executive and officials to account. And on this occasion, the Select Committee is doing its job, following up on the findings and the recommendations of the AG, particularly in relation to the payment of the UIF COVID-19 health benefit and the compensation fund, COVID-19 compensation for those affected employees. The committee will want to hear from the department and the UIF the steps taken to address and remedy the issues raised by the AG, and the officials will provide those answers. But I would like to take the opportunity just to provide a broad context of the department's response to COVID-19 and the lockdown required to slow the spread of the pandemic. As the Department of Labor, we were directly involved in the following areas: the UIF distribution of COVID-19 benefits, the compensation fund, supporting workers infected at the workplace, and in the inspection and enforcement branch, or enforcement services branch, developing regulations and directives to keep the workplaces safe during the pandemic, inspecting workplaces and enforcing existing health and safety regulations, as well as the COVID-19 regulations. Although the committee did not specifically request information on the inspector's